telehealth during COVID, gene transfer, availability, eligibility, durability, and reimbursability, non-factor replacement therapies, dormant titers in the state of inhibitors, joint health use and abuse, pain management, CBD and medical MJ, guidelines for VWD, disorders of fibrogen and rare clotting proteins, insurance and access issues, partner and carer challenges, faith and bleeding disorders, sex and bleeding disorders, Muslim culture and bleeding disorders, LGBTQI and bleeding disorders, mental health and bleeding disorders, Camp Unite for Kids, Camp Fires for Adults, and the Teen Impact Awards for those in between. Yes, the National Hemophilia Foundation's 72nd Bleeding Disorders Conference and its first fully virtual conference took place last week from August 1st through the 8th and included sessions on these topics and many more. I'm joined now on this episode of the Bloodstream Podcast by my wife and co-host, Natalie Lynch. Hello, Natalie.
Hello, hello, hello.
And colleague and co-host, Amy Board. Hello, Amy.
Hello and welcome.
And the three of us attended pieces of the week-long virtual extravaganza, and we'll be speaking about some of our highlights and big takeaways from the conference in just a little bit. But I have to start today's episode by talking about something monumental in the story of Believe Limited, and that is the pre-order availability of Bombardier Blood. Yes, Bombardier Blood, that film you've been hearing about now for maybe almost 4 years since the beginning of this podcast, the one that chronicles Chris Bombardier's inspiring quest to be the first person with hemophilia to attempt Mount Everest, is currently, get this, number one, the number one most pre-ordered film releasing on August 18th on iTunes. That is amazing, and this really is a huge moment for Believe Limited, for the bleeding disorders community, in my opinion, and selfishly for me. So it would mean a lot to me if listeners were inclined to pre-order my first feature documentary, a project I am so proud of, Bombardier Blood, available to pre-order on iTunes now and available broadly on August 18th. There are links in the program notes for more. Amy, I'm like kind of shocked we're finally here. I can only imagine after the gauntlet that you and Rob went through last year to bring this thing to, I don't know, everywhere. It must feel a little surreal to actually be at the point where, oh, the film's about to move into the world without us.
It does. It feels a little emotional that the story is going to expand. I think last year we traveled to chapters and we were able to witness firsthand how the film and how the story really touched people in the bleeding disorders community. And I know just from my personal circle, my friends and family, their excitement to see the film. I've had so many people private message me and said that they've pre-ordered it, and just to witness your dream of this film becoming the piece of media, the storytelling that might bring what it's like to live with hemophilia into the larger community is happening. And it's emotional. It's emotional. We're all so personally connected to it, but it's really special.
It's like dropping your kid off at college. Like, they're into the world now, and you kind of just hope you did your best job. I'm really excited for this. Even though I've seen it a million times already, I sob every time. I talked to my sister the other day and she's like, oh, I forgot my iTunes password, so I couldn't pre-order it, which is not a good enough excuse. You know, you can recover your password. So I'm going to get on her today. And then one other thing that's really exciting is I make a cameo in the film, but it's for like 1 second. So you should just pre-order it to see if you can find me.
That is a very good and true point. If you find Natalie Lynch in Bombardier Blood, please let us know, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. I would love to know if you were able to spot her in the film. That would be, you have good eyes if you are able to do that. But she is in there. She is in there somewhere.
It's a Where's Waldo.
So yes, pre-order Bombardier Blood, bombardierblood.com. We also released a new and our official trailer, which we've been sitting on for a long time for this moment. So I'm like, oh yeah, this only just came out, even though I've been looking at it for a while. So that's pretty cool too. And that's on the website, bombardierblood.com, if you want to take a look at that. But there's one other release that we have to touch on before we dive into the BDC review, so to speak. And it's actually a release here in the world of podcasting, Bloodstream Media's newest podcast. It's In the Genes, a gene therapy podcast, also launched last week during the BDC, and it is hosted and written by none other than Amy Board. So Amy, please, would you tell us a little bit about It's In the Genes?
Oh, so excited about this podcast. I think it's such a different offering in the gene therapy conversation right now. It's not based in hemophilia. It's not based on clinical data or what we are really talking about so thickly right now in terms of gene therapy. It's more of the story and the genesis of how the science came to be. And it's fascinating storytelling. The guests are incredible. We have two scientists and researchers featured in episode one, Dr. Richard Samulski and Dr. Theodore Friedman, who were there at the beginning of all of this. Dr. Samulski and his lab actually spent years and years and years perfecting the AAV virus. He spent his entire time like perfecting this virus to be the transport method of getting these clone genes into the human body. And Dr. Theodore Friedman worked with Dr. Frederick Sanger, who is a legend in the DNA world over in Oxford. And he, Dr. Friedman, actually wrote the very first paper here in the States in the 1960s about the potential of cloning genes to treat rare and chronic diseases. So both of these guys are able to share their story, and it's wonderful. It's going to be It's a small little bit. It's 25 minutes. It's not going to drone on forever. And it's fun. And there's episodes to come. There's four more episodes. So we hope everybody can subscribe and check it out.
And to hopefully incentivize you to do so, here is a little clip from episode one of It's in the Genes.
So if you imagine it going into a room and you flip the light switch on and the light doesn't come on, you go, oh, I can't see in here. So the objective of gene therapy is to take that light bulb and replace it. And when you replace it and flip the switch on, then everything functions appropriately. And so what we do is we carry these light bulbs in our viral package, and we go looking for the cells that are not working or lit up appropriately. And we swap them out for the good light bulbs. And when they come on, all of a sudden everything's functional and you can see again, and that cell begins to work appropriately.
I'm really, really, really excited to listen to this. I like to fashion myself as a lay scientist. And so this is a really exciting podcast. What was it like to interview people who have literally dedicated their lives to this science? And I mean, we're really living in the future. What was it like talking to these people, Amy?
I was very intimidated and felt a little nervous because they have such profound credentials. But both of these men in particular, and everyone that I interviewed, I think the joy of it was that they really, you could sense their excitement telling their stories, like going back and telling the story and the genesis of it. They didn't need to get into the particulars, the clinical particulars, the data findings, you know, all the things that I think they talk about ad nauseum. It was a little bit of nostalgia, and they were so personally connected. And watching Dr. Samulski actually shares a story at the very end of episode one about the first time that he administered gene therapy for a patient, and the meaning of that and the importance of that, and to imagine your entire professional life dedicated to this one thing, and then you can see it work in a child. I mean, it was really great. And the podcast is exclusively sponsored by BioMarin. We're so grateful for their support, and I hope everybody can subscribe and check it out.
I know I certainly will.
Yeah, science nerd.
You made me well up a little bit there. Yeah, that is something to dedicate your whole life to it and then to be at this stage. To think you were talking to somebody who wrote their first paper on gene therapy 60 years ago. And, you know, there's no guarantee you get to this point. So, yeah, it's profound. It's in the Genes, the newest podcast from Bloodstream Media. Please do check it out. There's also no interview today as part of Bloodstream. So if after this you want to hear from some other voices talking about stuff related to hemophilia, go check out It's in the Genes. But the reason actually there's no interview today is because Amy and I had a few hours of interesting conversations as part of the Science Fair's Clinician's Corner during the BDC with expert hematologists such as Dr. Len Valentino, the CEO of NHF, Dr. Doris Kwan, Dr. Nina Huang, Dr. Michael Wang, and Dr., who am I leaving out, Guy Young. So we had a wide-ranging conversation that I don't know about for you, Amy, that it may have been the most impactful part of my conference experience, those conversations in the science fair. And so we're going to spend some time working on those hours of conversations to turn them into a digestible episode. That'll be out next week. So that's going to replace the interview segment for today. And we're going to spend the rest of our time today talking about our experiences at BDC, which we have not shared with each other yet. So you're going to hear this in a very organic and raw way in just a moment. Before I remind you that the Bloodstream podcast is only possible thanks to the founding and ongoing support of our presenting sponsor, Takeda. For over 70 years, Takeda has been committed to the bleeding disorders community. You have trusted Takeda to continue to provide support and education through conferences like NHF's BDC, community walks and talks, and all engagements in between. Patients are always at the forefront of what Takeda does, no matter where you are on your bleeding disorders journey. Takeda is there for you. Learn more about Takeda's commitment and resources by visiting bleedingdisorders.com. I do appreciate how easy that is to remember. Once again, bleedingdisorders.com. All right, Amy Board, you are up first. What for you is top of mind? NHF 2020, highly anticipated, BDC, Atlanta, no virtual, 3 days, no eight. What's top of mind for you?
I think we have to start by giving the National Hemophilia Foundation a humongous shout out. They had to pivot quickly, and they really did. And I think we take for granted the amount of coordination that went into this thing. A lot of sessions had to be pre-recorded. All of the technology, it was incredible. NHF, as you know, is a nonprofit organization, and while it's our largest national organization, it's still a nonprofit, and everybody is kind of boots on the ground. That organization, everybody from every department is a part of this thing, and to witness going into sessions and seeing, you know, NHF staff, you know, like the financial staff, you know, the accountants and the education staff in these sessions moderating. It was really great. So hats off to NHF. It was wonderful, and they made a huge pivot, and it was great. So I have to say that. My biggest takeaway, I think, was in many different sessions, everybody kept talking about the advancement of telemedicine, telehealth through COVID. I think it's incredible. Telemedicine has been a conversation, a policy question, a reimbursement question for years and years and years and years and years. I know I have had many conversations with staff at the Colorado HTC about telemedicine. And I think COVID has just forced everybody's hand, and it's going to be really fascinating to watch from a reimbursement, from a policy, and from a clinical standpoint of how telemedicine really pushes us into the future when it comes to our healthcare. So that was the biggest takeaway for me and the biggest watch out. And then I'd love to talk a little bit about the Teen Impact Awards.
Oh my goodness, go right ahead.
It was my favorite moment of the conference. And if you haven't seen it, please, my goodness, go to the website teenimpactawards.com or .org, Patrick.
That would be .com, Amy.
Great. Oh my goodness. Almost blew it there. So teenimpactawards.com. Please go and check out the show. Every year, I believe this is the sixth, seventh year of the Teen Impact Awards. Believe Limited honors and recognizes teenagers that have made significant contributions to their community. And I think people just think it's like teenagers standing up and receiving a certificate, which happens. But I don't think people understand that Believe Limited puts on a legitimate, scripted, ridiculous, silly, phenomenal, honoring award show for these teenagers and their families. And the amount of work that goes into honoring and speaking about each teenager is phenomenal. And this year, because it was virtual, I feel like it expanded its audience. And it was the only time at the conference, truly for me, that it felt like community. The chat was baller. Like, the chat was so great, and everyone loved it. CEO of NHF, Len Valentino, was there. My goodness, COO of NHF, Don Rodolini, was there. It was so, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. It was the dumbest, silliest thing I've ever seen. I mean, you guys just knocked it out of the park. And every teenager got a moment, and it's very rare for an award show to honor every teen, and it was spectacular. And even if you don't have teenagers in this community, you have to go check it out. It was great. It was the funniest thing. It was so funny. Hats off to the Believe Limited team. It was great. It was great. It was great.
I want to throw in too, Colby and her amazing opening Zoom song. I think Zoom needs to use that as a commercial. It's so good.
It's amazing.
So good. I watched it so many times. and you're right. You're right. It's not, you know, when you think of a teen award show, you think of like walking across the stage at a gymnasium and like sort of like, okay, everyone's name gets called. That's not what this is. It's really, you really feel like you get to know who these teenagers are and their contributions. And it's so beautiful and inspiring.
I am so thankful for, you know, to take a couple minutes to highlight the Teen Impact Awards. One thing that occurs to me in what you're saying, Amy, and what you just echoed, Natalie, there was a few, so this is the sixth annual Teen Impact Awards, and maybe it was year three. I can't remember now, but I think my gut says year three. There was a way that the recipients showed up that year that was a step beyond the prior couple years. Their attire, their energy, their preparation for what they were going to say on stage. And I remember registering that in real time and thinking, this is the result of two prior years of work and establishing a brand and a feel and a tone and a certain amount of grandiosity for what this awards program should be. And for me, once they started showing up like that, which has been the case ever since, that's what took it to another level, because that's what told me that now the chapter leaders and the parents, and most importantly, the honorees themselves, are seeing in this an opportunity to be celebrated, to be excited, to dress up, to like speak their minds. You know, we give them the absolutely mandatory guardrails, and beyond that, you know, to tell us what you're here to tell us. And the shares are just, I get goosebumps talking about what, like hearing them on stage traditionally, on screen this year in the video compilations that we put together with all their self-submitted videos, there are always a handful of sound bites and remarks and perspectives shared that just change me and make me think a little differently about the community and what's being done. So I appreciate you giving us the chance to bask a little bit in the positivity and empowerment that comes with the Teen Impact Awards. And as you said, if anyone missed it, wants to see it, if you're a registered conference attendee from NHF, you can go actually back in through the sessions and watch it on demand the way you can any session for 30 days following the conference. But we also have it on the Bloodstream Media YouTube channel. So if you look up the Teen Impact Awards on YouTube, you'll find it there as well. So thanks, Amy. I really appreciate that.
And I should mention, Patrick and I were lucky enough to hear NHF CEO Dr. Len Valentino share an anecdote about the Teen Impact Awards. He was asked by his board of directors at the National Hemophilia Foundation the top five success or highlights of the conference so far when we spoke to him. And he shared with Patrick and I that the Teen Impact Awards was on top of that list, which is just a huge gift to the program. And it was really exciting to hear. So yay.
I want to throw one more thing in. What I love about the Teen Impact Awards is I feel like right now, especially with everything going on in the world, there's these feelings sometimes of, oh my gosh, where's this world going? And it's always every year with the Teen Impact Awards, when I hear these teens speak, I'm so hopeful. Because what they say, I'm like, my mind wasn't there when I was a teen. Like, it's so, they're so mindful and they're so advanced and they're so thoughtful of themselves and their community and the world at large that despite all the craziness going on, it really is just like a we're going to be okay. We might not be able to do it, but this next generation is really, really great. So that
100%.
Every year it does it to me.
Well, thank you both for that very much. And Natalie, what else from the conference? Let's give you a chance to speak a bit to the things that kind of jumped out for you What else from the conference other than the Teen Impact Awards stuck out?
Well, I definitely want to echo what Amy said in terms of a big high five to NHF. And it, you know, not an easy feat to move this all virtually. And I was impressed, you know, you sign on and it does feel like you're walking up to a hotel. And there's, you know, the information booth. And so just even the graphics and the experience, the virtual experience was really beautiful. And in the short amount of time they had, I was really impressed with that aspect. There was the spouses track this year that had two sessions. And the first one was the Battle of the Sexes. I attended that session. I'm always a little disappointed in the offerings, and this year there being two sessions, one the Battle of the Sexes and the other one Compassion Fatigue. We're recording this before the end of the conference on Friday. The Compassion Fatigue, full disclosure, is actually tomorrow, so I haven't attended that one. So I can't speak to that, but I did attend Battle of the Sexes, and for there only being two sessions, one of them, the relational one being heteronormative, was kind of upsetting to me, even though I am a straight woman. It just felt like very exclusionary in a way where especially the issues that were talked about were universal. But through a lens of this is sort of how men and women are different, which also just felt a little bit outdated too. Like a little bit, there were some interesting things like, yeah, hormonally and cognitively, brains develop a bit differently. And maybe like those play into conflict. But I also feel like it didn't give credit to like us being humans and having like a frontal cortex to like override these other things that come in that, you know, it was a little frustrating. It went through some of the issues that come up, sex and intimacy, money, children, pain and bleeding disorders. A lot of relational things were listed and there were no tools given. And I just felt like this is such an opportunity for spouses to come together and to maybe get some new tools. Like, you're frustrated. And basically there was like touching on, you know, there's sexual positions you can do that don't put a lot of pressure on the joints. Well, they didn't go into them, and keeping it PG, okay, fair. But I think the issues aren't like, here's a position you can use to make sex easier, but more so, like, I think the harder part is like the conversation around the challenges of intimacy. It's not like we need to know a different position. It's that's having that conversation. How do you have that conversation with your spouse before you're in the bedroom so that intimacy can grow sexually? And those pieces were missing. There was no conversation. There were no tools around, you know, when money comes up or when a lot of money spent on bleeding disorders or healthcare, and that causes the family to not have money to do other things. You know, like the real hard, vulnerable, and intimate conversations were not. And there was it was a lecture. It wasn't conversation. They weren't had, and I feel like it's such an opportunity. It's once a year to get people who feel, you know, they want to be able to support their spouse, they want to create a deeper and more intimate, more vulnerable relationship, like an opportunity to really go in there and a safe place to do so. So I felt a bit disappointed.
That's really refreshing, actually, to hear you speak just really honestly about what that experience was like. And if I'm hearing you accurately, it sounds as though the session, well, I mean, you brought up a few what I'll call issues, one of them being the limited number of sessions. But in the session that you attended, it sounds like the topics that were brought up, like as banners, are worthwhile topics, but the approach, the lack of tools connected to those topics, and maybe the lack of inclusivity that was used in discussing each topic was kind of the problem. Is that sort of an accurate breakdown, or do you feel like they could have done a better job with even just deciding what topics were of such priority?
No, I mean, the opening slide was like, these are the issues that have come back in recent surveys of the biggest struggles in partners in the bleeding disorder community. And the list was great. I was really excited. Like, yeah, those are things that we struggle with sometimes. And, you know, I have relationships with a lot of spouses in the community who, you know, we email back and forth, or we're on calls of just like our own frustrations. And it's an interesting moment to come together as a community of partners and spouses and have the opportunity to talk about these things and to hear different perspectives, or even, you know, in this online format, to have a lecture. Because I get, you know, it's a bit difficult to have true interaction, or, you know, breaking off into groups. So more of a lecture. But if it's going to be a lecture and you're a professional social worker or therapist, like, come with some tools that those watching can walk away with.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add to that. I mean, I think you're making some excellent points. And I know you've also been a part of partner tracks in previous conferences, too. So you have some frame of reference as well, which I think is useful context. And I think that's valuable feedback. I'm not sure how, I mean, there's those session surveys, and maybe this is a plug for, if you have attended the NHF, each of those sessions, you know, they're pushing the survey. And I know as an attendee, I'm like, I get it, the survey. But I know as a event planner how important those things are, and that they take them very seriously. So, you know, maybe this sounds silly to say, Natalie, but I would really encourage you to like fill out that survey and fill it out honestly, because I have, to a point that Amy made and you echoed, like complimenting NHF's job getting this whole thing virtual, I have felt as though there's been a receptivity for innovation and ingenuity that I can't say I personally have experienced in my relationship to NHF in the last number of years, not to the same degree I have lately. And I think part of that's been forced by our circumstances, but nevertheless, I think there's a receptivity there that's worth leaning into. So thanks for sharing, and I hope you'll share it with them too.
Yeah, I plan to. I feel there's so much potential, and even if you are going to have two sessions, you can make them where people leave feeling like so full and like, okay, I got some information, I have some greater understanding, my compassion tank feels refueled, I feel connected to other people who really see me and know what it's like to have a partner in the bleeding disorders community, the joy and the stresses, you know, like they both exist. And this is such a special community. And the other thing too, is because when you are the partner or the spouse, you're not necessarily connected unless you've personally made an effort to connect to other partners or spouses. So then you go back into the world and you're kind of doing this on your own. And maybe you have, you know, friends who have partners and spouses, and you can talk about like the basic, you know, couples issues. But there is something different when it, community specific. So I will take this feedback. And I have to say, you know, I'm glad that this track even exists. So I think that's a start.
And a lot of times, in particular with rare and chronic diseases, it takes a community being vocal about some of the needs that are still in the gap space to get like people pushed towards trying to find the right person who's been doing this work to share with you guys, or to have, you know, a social worker in our community, you know, connect to the idea and start to push into it. So I think your thoughts are really important, and maybe it will, you know, continue to propel folks to try to get you connected to the right, you know, person that's working in this, because there has to be somebody who's working in this.
Yeah. Thanks, Amy.
Well, there's a few things I want to share with each of you and get your take on. This conference didn't, for me personally, leave me where I expected. And as Natalie mentioned, we're recording this before it's over, so I feel sort of unresolved about the whole thing. We have a huge session tonight, so I don't even know really how to process this as though it's in the past. But I do want to talk about a piece of it, and I'm really interested to hear what you guys have to say in just a moment after this quick break. All right. So, Amy, Natalie, as I just mentioned, this was not... There are parts of this that I feel unresolved about, and I don't even exactly know how I want to jump into. I have been really impressed in general with how much the conference has had to offer, considering the virtual format and that there are fewer sessions. It's been really neat to be able to bop in and out of sessions more easily than when it's live and you got to go down a giant corridor and maybe my ankles are feeling kind of stiff because we've been walking all day and I'm like, I'm not going to walk all the way over there. I'm also going to pass 50 people and I like them all, but I'm trying to get to a session. None of that exists. So the ability to just jump in and out and get information is there. To Amy's point from earlier, it's been tough to feel community during the Teen Impact Awards because the chat was really bumping. I felt it in there. I've been a part of a few other sessions and the Camp Unite program where there was like really good interactivity and chat going on. But I've also been a part of some sessions that were valuable and important, but either they were set up in a way where there was not a live chat box or you could submit a question for like follow up later. But that was sort of like, well, when? I don't know. Like that didn't really seem, and that doesn't cultivate conversation or interaction. So I have struggled to feel as connected, and I guess I've noticed how much of the conference traditionally I appreciate for simply that, its ability to bring us to one spot where we can be together and attend these sessions, but then also talk about them together and sort of like stretch the way we talk about them and think about them and share experiences. And none of that can really exist in this format. I'm not sure what could be done to improve on that. I think a lot of it just has to do with the virtual format. So I think in large part, that's just sort of the nature of this beast. But that's not even the thing that kind of has stuck out to me the most. It's actually had to do with me more personally. And I'm even tentative to want to get into this because I feel like it can, I don't know, be a little complicated to share too much of my own personal treatment and regimen stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm an adult male with hemophilia. We're living through unprecedented times. People have a lot of questions, and I spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff and researching it and speaking to literally the world's experts about it. So I'm inclined to be a little less shy right now and admit that coming into the BDC, Natalie knows this because we've been talking about it for, I mean, really a couple of years, but more seriously the last few months, I was really curious about where gene therapy is. I mean, I've been curious about where gene therapy is going, but I'm talking now as a patient. I've been curious about gene therapies becoming commercially available probably this year, probably, maybe, likely, maybe, question mark, this month. And maybe is that a direction I want to go sooner than not? And that wasn't a thought I had had prior to maybe a couple few months ago as like this moment in time was getting a little closer. And frankly, as my routine currently was bringing me more stress and strife than it had been, and that's been growing for a while. So I came into this conference kind of partially wondering maybe I'll be quicker to adopt gene therapy than I once thought. I also came into this conference aware of other treatments that have been made available in the last couple few years that are advancements in the treatment of hemophilia A that I have also not embarked upon, and emicizumab being the specific thing. Just, you know, why dodge it? So I came into this conference more curious than ever about emicizumab and gene transfer as someone who currently uses a factor replacement therapy and regimen. And as the conference is wrapping up, I have to tell you, I don't have any, my interest has gone backwards. I am feeling a little more secure in what I'm doing right now. And in spite of some of the stress of the infusions and the culmination, like I'm kind of done with elements of managing hemophilia with factor replacement therapy. I'm kind of done with it. But as I speak to the experts and really try to break down all the known and unknown data about what's currently available, what's coming soon, and put that against what's been out for a while, what we know pretty well, what we can track inside the body pretty well, and what I have been using with my specific only body for many years now, I come out of the conference thinking like maybe I am going to be sticking to what I'm doing for longer than I thought just a month or two ago. And that's fine. In fact, I heard some people speaking about factory placement products in a session that was like the patient story for, you know, it was like there's gene therapy and there's these other things, but for those who are on factor, like here's some stories. And I went to that session and I heard a number of points made that resonated with me. And I was like, yeah, I what that guy said, like that's kind of, I'm in a good spot right now and this stuff is exciting, but the risk reward for me personally, if the questions keep stacking, then the risk reward equation goes real off balance. And then something that Natalie and I have talked about at length is just what my life is with how I treat and manage myself now, and to alter that for an improvement in my therapeutic regimen, potentially and probably, but at the risk of altering what's working really well, I think I need more of those questions answered before I can feel comfortable making that choice. So to kind of bring this sort of meandering brain dump to a close, so I was excited about the Teen Impact Awards and the Let's Talk Mental Health documentary and all the program stuff that Believe is doing. I've been excited to launch Bombardier Blood and have that be kind of like part of the backdrop of the conference, and to have Hemophilia the Musical come out the Friday before, and all of that has been splendid. But on a personal level, as just a guy with hemophilia, I wish I was feeling a little more, I don't want to say optimistic or hopeful, because I do, but I think my future, I guess what I'm realizing is that changes to my story are probably further off than maybe I was starting to think they would be. And maybe that will change again, because this is a fluid thing and who knows. But in this moment, I'm sort of like, well, okay, I think I'm actually doing what's right for me now. And I don't know how I feel about that. Like I think I want to be moving along, so to speak. I want to be able to reduce the burden, to increase the amount of time that I have protection in my body, and to think about hemophilia just less. But I don't think I'm there yet. So I'm trying to deal with that. And for me personally, coming out of the conference, that's where I'm at. And I guess that's where the community not feeling as present as it does in the live conferences is kind of a bummer, because like I was on the phone with a couple people yesterday who I would typically be, you know, chatting in the hallways with, and we were talking a little about conference stuff, but it's not the same as when you're catching up with people, you know, in the space in real time, fresh off a session. Oh, you were just at that payer thing, and what were they talking about? That's crazy. I just heard this thing about, you know, whatever the case may be, and like that does not exist. So I guess I'm also feeling a little alone in that experience that I'm having, because I'm not around other guys with hemophilia to even just sidebar for like a second to be like, I'm feeling weird, like this treatment stuff, like there's not even an opportunity to say that. So that's where I'm at, guys, and I'm appreciative that I have this platform to share that with you. And I guess I'm hopeful that maybe there's people who are listening who have experienced the conference and some of this resonates with them too.
I know that it has been a conversation in our household, and I know I can say for a fact that going in, I think you really thought you were going to feel even more strongly on the other side of the conference, that it was time for a change. So it was very interesting to hear that that the opposite happened. Were there any, I know you have an appointment coming up at your HTC next week, that you were going to kind of get more information and ask some questions. I know that you have done kind of a 180 this week on where you thought you were, but did anything come up this week that will inform questions you want to ask at your HTC next week?
Yes. There were some specifics about both, I'd say both emicizumab, which is currently available, and gene transfer, which isn't yet, but maybe soon, that I want to follow up about. I mean, one of the very specific things that I'm like, oh, okay. As someone who has previously had an inhibitor, it's likely that I will not be eligible for gene therapy in its first wave of introduction, because the clinical trials that are going excluded people with a current or past inhibitor. Clinical trials often will narrow the people they're studying because they're trying to reduce variability. It makes total sense. But because this is the first gene therapy for hemophilia, this is still the advent of gene therapy, it's highly unlikely that insurance companies will reimburse this very expensive and to be determined medicine for people that were not part of the clinical trial, that were excluded as part of the clinical trial. So chances are that will change over time. There will be studies that will, and that will change. But yeah, it was kind of like made apparent to me. It was kind of made apparent to me a day or two ago, like, that's not an option. And there's going to be a lot of people who face that because of immune responses to the virus that's being used in the first place. And you're not going to know. Like, it's not like when we heard about longer acting factor, and if you don't have an inhibitor, it's like, okay, yeah, that applies to me. That's not how this gene therapy stuff is going to work. You can have immunity to the virus that's being used as a transport vehicle, and that's going to not, that can't therefore be used. So you might get screened out for that. Or if you've had an inhibitor, you know, it's not for you yet. And I, you know, I feel almost a little embarrassed getting emotional about it, because I have such great options and a great quality of life. And it's like a little bit of entitlement that, having had an inhibitor tolerized for more than 20 years, it's like, really? That has to exclude me from this option that in this moment I don't even want, but knowing that it could be made available, and knowing that for some people it has been life-changing. And I know the marketing people can't say that word, but I'm using words that people have shared from their experience. So it has been for some, and I'm curious about that. So it is a little emotional to be like, oh, okay. I still want the information. I still want to keep current, but I think I can rule that out for myself for a while. And then with regard to emicizumab, yeah, there are some specifics about things that are being presented in the body. You know, Dr. Wong got into this a bit. Amy, correct me if you remember it differently, but essentially we see these proteins that are being produced in people who have Hemlibra that are only produced when there are blood clots in the body. And they're happening not in cases of like identified bleeds, they're just being tested for these proteins and they're showing up. And as Dr. Wong pointed out, that kind of indicates two things. One, that there was some kind of aggravation to the bleeding and clotting cascade to begin with. And that number two, a clot was indeed formed. But we don't quite know why that's happening. And that to me is a bit unsettling. And I want to make really clear, I'm paraphrasing something one of many doctors told me a few days ago. So don't take this to the bank, take it to your doctor and ask questions. But that's something that I am now curious about, because if there are bleeds and clots that are occurring in some kind of like routine under the radar way, and we don't really understand why, I'd like us to understand why before I switch off of what I'm doing that I understand really well for something that it's like, there's real big advantages to it. That's been very prominent in the conversation. What's been less prominent are things like what I just said, which was shared a few days ago by Dr. Wong, and I have not heard prior to that. So I don't know if I answered your question, Natalie, but there you have it.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like there are definitely questions that, that you'll bring to the HTC, and that I, as your partner and advocate, can, you know, I know it's hard to be in the patient chair sometimes and remember all the questions you have. So I think it's important for me to be clear too on what you want to get out of that appointment. So, and what you learn from this conference, or gain from this conference that can help inform those questions. You know, you said that the community piece and the brotherhood and the serendipity and magic that occurs when it is in an actual place and not held virtually didn't exist. But, you know, the learning and the curiosity and the moving us forward as a community, that did exist. And that is a great takeaway. And lucky that could even exist. I'm so grateful for you sharing your personal experience with the community and what this virtual experience was for you. So, and with gene therapy, I think the operative word is yet. You know, like, round one's not for you, but who knows what's coming down the road. So, thanks, Patrick.
I did sense that heaviness in you this week. I didn't necessarily know the core of it, but that makes a lot of sense. And I echo what Natalie said. I do think it is, we are very lucky here in the bleeding disorder community that this education is so accessible. And your wrestle with this, I bet, mirrors a lot of other young men that are struggling with this as well. And so I hope you find some opportunity to have conversations about it with the people that mean something to you. And I think if anything, the only thing that I can take away from some of these conversations is that the science is happening much faster than they ever thought that it would. And so that's exciting to me. And, you know, I just think it's a wonderful opportunity for others to hear where you are and the questions that you're asking and the emotional response that you're having, because it's, unfortunately, it's part of it. It's part of it. And it's good and it's natural. And that patience that everyone experiences, like we get, you know, pushed into a corner, we can't move forward regardless of what the situation is, that's the moment where we can really wrestle with our soul in good ways. So I think it's just that time.
Yeah, well said. And Natalie, the point you made about yet, my takeaway is just to keep paying attention and keep asking questions. Now that I have internally kind of altered my expectation management a bit this week, and if for a few reasons, and will probably continue to. Okay, just keep learning, keep paying attention, and keep doing what I'm doing now to keep myself healthy. So thank you both for hearing that. Thank you all for listening to that. And if you had a conference experience that you want to share with us, tell us. We want to hear about it. You can email us, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. You can find Amy, Natalie, or I on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Just look up our names. You'll find us there. And if you've got something you want to share, tell us. Maybe we'll share it on the podcast. Who knows? We have a lot of stuff that we do. So when stories come our way, it's really no telling where that might go. But that is just about it. We're about out of time. So any last thoughts from either of you? I'll start with you, Amy Board. Any final thoughts?
I just think it's important that we get together once a year like this. And I know we had to make a pivot because of the pandemic, but just even going back to what both of you said, you know, how important the in-person meeting really is. And if there was ever an argument like, oh, we can make it virtual because it was so successful, it's so important to just be in the same room. So here's hoping, 2021.
Yeah, I think what is interesting too, after hearing you speak and just thinking about the conference, is we're all individual, right? So everyone's risks and benefits are different for all things, and really weighing like where you are in a process, because the advancements are amazing. And just because, you know, you, Patrick Lynch, decided that right now risks and unknowns are outweighing the benefits, that's what this conference told you, that there might be someone who is on Factor right now who their regimen is really crippling to their life, and really it's time for a change, and the risks may outweigh, or the benefits may outweigh the risks. So just really, you know, not even being like, oh, this is what this person's doing or this is what that person's doing, like it really just being like, what is right for me? What is my current situation? Where are there gaps? How can those be changed? And what does that look like? And I think it's a conversation. I think it's talking and hearing, you know, what these experiences are for other people, and being honest and sharing. So I appreciate everyone's shares. And I'm fingers crossed 2021.
Oh, fingers crossed 2021. Well, thank you, Natalie. Thank you, Amy. Thank you all for listening. And that is all for this episode. Thanks to everyone at Believe Limited and Bloodstream Media, as well as to everyone who contributed to the Science Fair, Teen Impact Awards, Let's Talk, Breaking Through, Hemophilia the Musical, and I'm going to throw in Stop the Bleeding because it comes out the last week of August. So stbhemo.com, one last plug. We could not do all of this without those who have made these programs possible through their tireless work and committed efforts these last number of months. So thank you to everyone. And thank you to the National Hemophilia Foundation for their support of our work during the BDC. And of course, thanks to our presenting sponsor, Takeda, with that really complicated website, bleedingdisorders.com. Subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast and It's in the Genes podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you happen to do that on iTunes, a couple other things you could do. You could leave a review for both podcasts on iTunes. You could also pre-order Bombardier Blood. I know you're sick of hearing it, but I got to say it a lot. Also tell your friends. Leave us ratings, share our shows, and tell us what you want to hear about. Bloodstream on Facebook, Bloodstream Media, that is, on Facebook and YouTube, Bloodstream Info on Instagram and Twitter, or again, the email address is mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. There's a reminder here to check the program notes in this episode for links and additional information about the various things that were featured on this episode. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, my name is Patrick.
And I'm Natalie.
And I'm Amy.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.